Right, so and 4B, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. Just that. Music. Simple.
All right.
Now, so everyone use something from somebody. You know, it's like Young John, yeah.
Yeah.
You know. Imagine if you was the Dan to him, no. And he's willing to be your student. So that it didn't happen this way with these guys. They didn't give them the credit. Like, I don't know if you would have got to Gregory and said to Gregory, did you follow Slim Smith? And he would have said yes. Maybe he would have said no. You know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, because that's the question I always ask. Who were you inspired by? And be amazed if some of the guys don't tell you they inspired me. They won't give you no specific person that they listen to.
Yeah, them Jamaican artists tend not to want to do that. Them don't give credit to other Jamaican artists. Them will tell you about you know, Otis Redding. Or them will tell you about, you know, Sam Cooke. Them will mention other American artists. But to say, yes, I really used to listen a lot of Bob Marley. I really used to listen a lot of Alton Ellis, Slim Smith. Them tend not to admit it. Oh, it's Jah give I the credit. Yeah, we all know that. Everyone know that. Jah is the creator.
Yeah, but who specifically?
Who specifically did you follow or emulate, you know what I mean? Because the style, you know, like you said, you just said it, Gregory sing a lot about being lonely. You listen to Slim Smith, him sing a lot about loneliness, nobody loves him. And when him died, him was so lonely that him crash a man through class and cut himself and bleed to death.
That's
and him sing, if you listen to them songs, you could hear that he was hurting. Pain, him was singing.
He was in pain.
He was in pain. Nobody loves me. Nobody cares. No one to hold. No one to miss.
Hey, you know what Coxon said? He said, Alton said, he think Coxon used to like for him to have problems with women.
Because he can sing better.
Because he can sing better.
That's right. Can bring it out more. Easier.
Yeah.
Same thing when Gregory sing, you know, Night Nurse,
yeah,
and them music there.
Yeah.
You can hear the passion and the, you know, that can really mean it.
Well, you know what they say Gregory was singing about when he was singing about Night Nurse.
Hey. Hey. But that's what him is about.
Yeah.
But the way it come out,
yeah,
you know. Sometimes loneliness causes that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
People don't want to be lonely, so, you know, them turn
and
to sex.
Then I think sometimes it comes from childhood, from their childhood. Who know how they related to the parents, you know, and if the parent was there for them, if the parent beat the crap out of them.
I tell you, man, that first 7 years.
We know, and you tell me it's a Jamaican thing where the parents whip the boy child behind.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. That's the thing here, too. My mother died. I don't know about today, because you go to jail today.
Yeah,
you go to jail today.
But now who I see you talking about that?
Oh, the guy from Barbados, yeah. So it's a Caribbean, it's a thing where, what I've come to the conclusion, is a thing where the mother want to protect that boy child because he's going to go out in that wicked world out there. So he got to stay in line. She's protecting him. She loves him. So she don't want him to get into trouble. So she's going to make sure that that boy is going to toe that line. But she's going to whip his behind.
And that's not good.
No, it's not good.
Prevent him from doing things that little boy is supposed to do.
So then what happened when he get older and he meet a woman? You take that out, that's mama that he's whipping.
Now look, the thing is, him going to try to do the things that him wasn't allowed to do. The total opposite. That is not the best way to resolve problems, you know. So.
I have many Jamaican guys talk about that, about coming up as a youth and what they had to deal with at home.
Rough, man.
You've got to be frustrated, but it happens. don't have enough money.
Yeah, but sometimes we'll overdo it down there. I went back to Jamaica about 8 years ago, which is recent, pretty much recent, because same thing happening, but there was a kid next door, and was about 7 years old, and every morning, around 6 or 7, I was getting an ass whooping. Every morning, and I remember, I had flashbacks right then, that when I was a youth, I used to go up and hear this kid next door. And every morning, him get an ass whooping. But now as an elder, I sit there, I go and, you know, what could that kid have done? Every morning, that him get an ass whooping. Is him that bad? Because when you see the kid during the day, him is one of the nicest kid on the block.
Yeah.
One of the most lovingest kid on the block.
What is it that's making that parent do that to
him? Just frustration, man, and madness. Because I'm not thinking. I'm not really thinking, like you say, you know.
So have a problem at the job.
Yeah.
You come home, take it out on
you. Yeah, you're not supposed to do that. You know, you're not supposed to do that. In one respect, Jamaica is a nice country, you know, I love it, guys, where I come from, but... You know, in one respect, you can call Jamaica a dysfunctional country, you know, if you want to put it to these terms, the way we treat kids.
So they haven't come up to today's standards here.
No, man.
So apparently,
abuse, man.
So school, do they still do the same thing in school?
Yeah, man.
With the rotators?
Yeah, no, they're not like here, believe me. Even if them don't hit that much anymore, it's still not like here. The reason why them probably won't be hitting in Jamaica is because the kids might shoot them. Yeah, that's the only reason them, you know, probably cooled up, you know. Nah, man, I get some whipping, man. I wasn't the worst kid, you know, and I'm not taking no credit away from good kids, but, you know, I wasn't perfect kid, but I wasn't bad. I was an obedient kid. And I get punishment in school, such as for talking. I had to kneel down on my palm, just like this, with it facing down, into gravel.
What?
Yes, I had to get down. I can't do it now as a old boy, because it hurt me, the memory hurt.
This little girl.
And you had to kneel there, and the stone get up in it. When you lift up your hand after 30 minutes, the stone just become part of your hand.
And ain't nobody to complain to on that one, because you ain't gonna tell your mother on that name.
Yeah, it still happens over in India. This little girl, I know, she went to boarding school there last year. If she gets an answer wrong, she has to stand on one leg for the whole class. And then if she gets another answer wrong, they
it's know, British system, though. It's
yeah,
a British system.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of my Italian friends, a lot of the Italians who came over to America, who settled in Binghamton in the region, very respected like kids in the community, but they go home and their fathers beat them.
Yeah.
Fathers beat them.
Yeah, I'm honest.
And then they say, oh, it's just how it is. It's just how it is.
Just how it is.
No, it's cool if you don't know no other way. See, before when I was in Jamaica growing up, I didn't know that these things were around. So, guess what? It was fine to me. I didn't know I was poor.
Yeah.
Didn't have no refrigerator. I didn't have no TV. We live in one room. We'll sleep on one bed.
No phone.
No phone. I didn't see phone until I was 21. I didn't know what a pancake was till I was 21 years old.
Oh, man.
No, but I was, hey, my parents loved me. My mom says, hey, I didn't have no money for you to go to school.
So in other words, what you didn't know didn't really hurt you.
No, but you see, growth is one of the most beautiful things in life. Growth. Seasons show us that seasons change, you know what I mean? So, when you learn something new, you cannot unlearn it. It's not like a pipe and water come out and you turn it on and you turn it off. When you learn how to brush your teeth, you don't go back and say, throw away the toothbrush and I'm not going to learn how to brush my teeth anymore. No, you can't do that. You know, so, you know, we need to, once you learn what it is, I was beating my kids. You know, the same way I was getting punished in Jamaica, the things that I was getting punished for. And then I learned, I was growing, and I'm like, shit, this ain't right. I would beat my kid and I would be upset.
Yeah.
I'd feel the shit more than him.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, you can't do this.
Right. Yeah, I'm doing something.
So what I told him, that's how I figured out the 7-year theory. So my son didn't get as much, but my daughter got a little more because I understood it when she was a baby. So I start beat and start talk in school. Yeah, I would slap on the wrist and you know, but I no more beating because I used to beat like the wrath of God, you know.
And you got that from your parents.
Yeah, that's how I used to get it, you know. So you learn, and you don't pass the bad things on to your generation. You pass the good things on, throw away the bad thing, tell them about the bad things, you know.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I tell people, is every culture got good things and got bad things.
Every culture,
you know.
Of course. We're human beings, you know. And we do wrong things and there's no righteous one under the sun. So, you know, and the one thing them have on a monopoly and being perfect are good. Them can't come see me because I would like the formula. You know.
So you're granddad?
Oh yeah. Yeah, my grandson called me the other day and I'm saying, "Hi grandpa, I love you."
I love you.
Yeah,
it must be a joy to hear that.
Oh man, that was like, you know. See, when you're a parent, you know, when you're a parent, you actually in practice, you're learning as you go along. When you become grandparents, you're perfect art of parenting.
That's when you spoil the hell.
And that's when you start, the whole thing change, your mentality change. I'm putting up the money for my grandson.
Yeah.
You go way past your kids, you know. My grandson money, gotta go to college, you know. Hey, come over here, boy, let me give you $10. $10? You would even give your son $1. You know what I mean? Like, things change, you find yourself doing these things, so you have to grow with it, but grow with understanding, grow with knowledge, grow with wisdom. Don't, you know, throw away the bad things, because you always learn until you leave this earth here. It's a continual learning, you know. So, oh yeah.
Is that on?
Yeah.
So, this is Rastaz here, and we want to really ask some questions, musical questions now, about Cleon's personal career, how he started, when he started, where he started, and also influences. Who influenced him? Who influenced you, Cleon, as a youth growing up? Music that you used to listen to?
Let me see. First off, because tell you, say, I go and use an answer that's been used before. And how I get started was pretty much come out crying. That started with me crying. You know, where I was Kingston Public Hospital. You know, and of course that is in Kingston, so that's where the whole thing starts. But influences, many, many artists, man, many, many artists, you know. You can give credit to, you know, Alton, Slim Smith, you know, Ry Shirley, you know. Now call names of people that usually call, you know. Of course, the obvious, the Sam Cooks and the Drifters and, you know, Temptations and them groups there, but, you know, basically, I'm like, stay Jamaica, you know. Sure, said Jamaica had some great artists too, you know. John Holt with the Paragons, you know, Techniques, you know, Ken Booth, you know, Justin Hines, you know, Jackie Opel, you can't forget him, Scatterlights, you know, so we can go on and on and on, but them, they are really my influence, and it kind of come out in my music, because my music now don't sound like any just one, sound like everybody put together, you know, so.
Now, I asked you something last night, and I'm going to ask you again to the listeners here. When did you first go to the studio, and what age were you approximately?
Well, age is more easier to remember than the time itself,
okay.
The exact year, but I was around 17 years old, because it started playing about 15, we started practicing, you know.
What instrument?
Guitar, you know. Well, really, for me, if I answer the question personally, then it's more the history. But the answer I'll give you is like the history of Soul Syndicate.
The history of Soul Syndicate?
Yes, well, the beginning, and part of the history, the beginning.
Okay.
So it started was, I was friends to Tony Chin. Tony Chin was friend to Morris. Morris was friend to Foley. That's how the link is, you know, fully start. I think Morris couldn't play guitar before, I can't remember quite, but I think he used to, yeah. But fully went to take lessons, guitar lessons. So he would come back, him and Morris would toss it out, Tony Chin would learn the chords, bring it home, and then I...
Oh, wow.
I get it.
From one hand to hand.
Yeah, just so it's like about 2-3 years worth of that happened until one day Fuller's father decided to buy some equipment from a church that was selling some drums and guitar and bass. And we all take a cab to go to this place to pick up the instrument. Cab was like, it's, I don't know if you have been to Jamaica and say a taxi cab when it's ramp. When it's ramp.
Oh, my God.
You have man head all the house at the car. That's so much people in the car.
Thing, man.
So by the time the car stopped, and you know, I think somebody that paid the taxi man, I don't even remember who. I just know by the time I get out of the car, there was no man around me. Every man rushed the instrument and grabbed an instrument that he wanted to play. And the only thing was left was the drums. And I really didn't want to play the drums. So what I wind up doing is I wind up singing with them while they were playing, practicing to play. But here's how I used to do it. I used to leave because I wanted to play. Everybody else was just playing or singing. I wanted to play the guitar so much, so I was already sick, but I was already singing. So what I would do is then would rehearse like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening, but I would get near like 3 o'clock and take out all the equipment and take up the guitar and play it. So I get 3 hours worth of practice till them actually hook up. One day I was there playing and singing. When I finish, you know, I just hear a big applaud and I roll up my head and people was around the fence. And I'm like, whoa!
You sound good!
You know, because nobody, them talk was 2 people.
Really?
You know, one playing guitar and one singing. And one of the first time, you know, you never had many people playing and singing at the same time.
So, in other words, a singer didn't usually play no instrument.
Yeah, you know, well, in those days, remember the 50s, you know, even in American music, in those days, the 40s and 50s, singers sing, writers wrote,
and players play.
Yeah. That was how it used to be. It was rare in those days when you get an artist like, you know, Curtis Mayfield. Curtis played, sing, and wrote. That was like rare.
Yeah.
Your name is one of the geniuses that don't get no credit. Talking about geniuses.
Yeah, how much time do you hear Curtis Mayfield's name really mentioned?
You can't say Jerry Butler without saying Curtis Mayfield.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so.
Yeah. And I saw those guys perform back in 1959, Jerry Butler and Impression. They had no idea that they were super big back in Jamaica back then.
Yeah, man, we love them.
I think everybody mentioned
we
Bob to everybody mentioned Impression.
Me can go to some Bob shit, because everybody loves Bob.
You should hear meditation singing.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you should hear meditation sing. Ansel got the voice sound like Curtis.
But you know one, you know where one love come from?
Which?
People get ready.
Oh, that's right. People get ready for the dream.
You know, there ain't no room for the hopeless sinner who has hurt all mankind just to see it. So,
Curtis,
do you feel that? Bob just use it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And Choice of Color. Meditation sing that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I love that song.
Oh, yeah. No, there's tons of Curtis songs out there, man.
Yeah. I think he must be the most recorded. More Jamaicans have recorded stuff from Curtis Mayfield than any other artist.
Yep, Curtis. You know, we like music that other people tend to not like. And I don't know, I think it's the downbeat. We attracted to the downbeat, you know?
It's interesting you say that because going through, I was in Eugene's area, Green Island. And waiting on one of many buses. And brother, I couldn't believe what I was listening to. Tex Ritter.
Yeah, man.
I'm saying people is listening.
Nah, man. Them certain
Ritter.
Music. There's certain music we resonate with, man. Music, good
thing.
Music. We know good music when we hear it.
And Larry Tuffy, Hank Snow, he used to come on the radio. They listen to that.
Martin Robin. Down in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with the Mexican girl.
Luciano singing, doing stuff like that now.
Serious stuff, man. You know.
Man.
We loved Al Green before America.
Another one, you from your hometown?
Yeah, man. Now, Al Green made a song called Backup Train. Became famous in America, but you could not go to no party in Jamaica
that
Backup Train don't play. You know? Then after Al Green became famous over here, Americans put out Backup Train again, re-release it. Now we sound a late man, Al bad long time.
And Skeeter Davis.
That
blew me away. I said, Jamaica love Skeeter Davis.
Yeah, man. It's the melody of the song, you know. It's the melody of the song.
So when you hear Heptones and when you hear country living, that's like I said, damn, man, it sounds like country western music in a sense. I'm hearing these sounds.
It's the downbeat, you know. It's downbeat. You see how one, two, three, four. That is music, right?
Yeah.
Sorry. And you hit the music, but you hear the drum hitting. Two, three, four, two, three, four. It's the downbeat.
Yeah.
Boom.
And minor keys.
Jazz. Jazz is played like that.
Okay.
Blues is played like that. The downbeat. Funk. James Brown was on the downbeat.
And minor keys.
Yeah.
Heavy in the minor
keys. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. The songs and sing though.
Slim Smith. What a voice.
And he's always in pain, you know. I call him my Barry Manilow. Because a Barry Manilow in America is supposed to be the saddest man on the face of the planet. Two ships sailing in the night, and I always lose some love, and somebody always break him heart. It's like, whoa, man, you really got a problem. You know? Yeah, yeah.
So now, I want to ask you about ska and your interpretation. Being that you are a musician, I want to hear your interpretation of what really was happening and the changes from ska to rocksteady to reggae. What were the musical changes in that?
From ska to
rocksteady to reggae. Some artists, I even heard Alton say it's the same, but it's just some emphasis on different instruments.
Yeah, instruments and tempo. Okay. Tempo change.
Yeah.
You see, with ska, the emphasis was on the drum and the guitar. If it was a ska song, it would be, and the drummer would be going on the guitar.
And the horn solo one.
Well, yeah. You know, those days, because it was instrument, you had people playing
jazz
stuff that, yeah, you had musicians playing that, you needed to have them blow to help make the song even nicer.
Okay.
Plus, songs were concise in those days, you know. You had to limit your songs to 2.5 minutes, I think.
Okay.
It was very short, so you had to do the best of everything
real quick. Short amount of time.
But it's the tempo, but it's the drums, you're coming from ska, up tempo, real fast. Four beat, you know, with the guitar. So that is ska, you know.
And what was the bass doing in that?
The bass was just, it's a jazz projection.
Okay. So you don't observe the bass as much as you did when it comes to, when the thing is slow, you can hear the bass.
You can still hear the bass then, but the thing about it was more a moving bass. It was, you ever hear some jazz?
Yeah.
That was all the jazz with ska. It's more moving, you know. So,
so when the beat slows down?
When the beat slowed down, now it was rock steady.
Okay.
Beat slowed down and it went to pack. Pack, drummer. Pack. Pack. The bassman now have time to rock.
So you can do a lot of coloring up a little bit more. Yeah.
You have time to do plenty things.
Yeah, so then, yeah. And then reggae gets slow.
But the guitar also got slow. The guitar was just chack, 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 chack. See, with reggae now, it's just a little, and they are all minor changes, like Alton said, you say Alton said, you know, it's minor changes, the reggae now is just the guitar now, you have different type of reggae. Chinyakak, 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 right? Like when melodians used to, now I do the string, walking, oh, sweet sensation, you know,
chinyakak,
and you know, and then you have, you like the calypso kind of okay. Thing, eh? What Toots used to do. It in a room, I cry.
This
is more like calypso kind of reggae.
Yeah.
And then you have the. It all break down to what it is right now. It's like a mixture of rock steady and reggae.
But
rock
Toots steady. This is for my ear. Toots's sound is a little different from like the area he came from and the influences of that church,
mm-hmm.
that revival.
That's
church.
Right. That is Toots.
Yeah.
That's exactly Toots.
Now you know something that blew me and Junior when we went to Philadelphia to see Toots. You know, he held me up every time I see him. You know? But what we noticed, and this was amazing, we saw a gospel group, and this thing was packed. Saw a gospel group. So I said, oh wow, Toots is on right after the gospel group. And a lot of black Americans in there. He said, they're gonna love this. They're gonna love this thing. Because Toots is similar to what they're hearing. Yeah, now, you know, young gospel choir, they was getting down, man, singing beautiful voices. Okay, the gospel show ended. Man, the crowd disappeared. And a new crowd come in. That new crowd, she observed, because she was looking, she was up front. When she turned around and looked at the new crowd, it was all white faces. Young white faces.
College. Yeah.
And she was blown away. She says, wow. Because she had seen to us. She says, damn, this is amazing. How come they're not here to check this out? A different version of, here's a brother that's going to sound gospel-y, just like the people that was before. But they're not checking. They don't know nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like the same thing I felt with Bob when Bob first came here, who was going to check him out but them colleges? It wasn't no, it's like I said, when I saw Bob at the Apollo in 1979, what blew me away, I said, it made me say to myself, damn, I must be an unusual dude. Okay, first thing is I never seen as many white faces in Harlem all coming
Thank
to see
you.
Bob.
Oh yeah.
It was mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah.
I seen a brother that was a vendor. He's walking underneath the marquee. He turns around, look up at the marquee and said, who the hell is Bob Marley?
Mm-hmm.
Now that left with me, I never forget, 20 years ago, I never forget that.
Yeah, man, I hear that too, man. That's
so
true.
It was not promoted to black America.
Well, you know, if you, it's not that it wasn't promoted to, you know, it was that it wasn't accepted. A little bit it was that it wasn't accepted by black America.
What's the reason of that, though? I got my conclusion.
You know, there's many things you can say because, you know, at one time there was a tension between West Indians and black Americans. You know, you remember them days, you know, when, you know, it's like, there was some tension, it's like, black Americans, you know, I think it all started from hearing, when we used to say back to Africa, we would hear, no, I'm an American.
Yeah.
And that used to drive us crazy as, but yeah, we understand you're as American, I'm a Jamaican too, but we're all from Africa, right?
Yeah.
And Americans would still say, no,
I'm not no African.
You know.
You hear that more from a black American, I'm not no African, than you would hear from somebody from y'all.
Yeah, and Bob was right at the peak. And he did wind up uniting, brought us together. He really did. He said, because what came after his death.
Yeah.
If you listen, one of his last album was about what? Could You Be Loved?
Yeah.
Sing that to the black Americans.
Yeah.
Could you be loved and be loved? You know, say something. And it's a reggae. Say something. Rockers. You know, guys, you have neglect. And do it in the funk for sure. Yeah. Say, let's get together. What's your problem?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
So, and then this, like you said, before he died, that thing he was trying, he took less money. I noticed. To take second billing
to Commodores.
To the Commodores.
Because the Commodores people were idiots. You can't have Bob Marley open for you, Rasta. Commodores? Nah. That's a big mistake.
It was a big mistake they made.
People,
they realized.
Bob finished playing on the crowd. The place was empty.
They said you can hear a pin drop.
Bob finished playing and the place was empty.
They stood for 15 minutes giving them standing ovation.
Yeah, I mean. This is empty, man. You don't do that.
Well, you know.
That disrespect.
Bob
was on the last leg and Bob was already known.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you miss that?
Yeah.
Should be the other way around, you know. Commodores is okay, but it wasn't, them not in the category of Temptations and them. You know what I mean?
In the early 70s, seeing Bruce Springsteen had more foresight than some people. Because Bruce Springsteen let him, Bob, at the Maxis, Kansas City. But Sly Stone also hired Bob and fired him after he performed. He opened up for Sly Stone. Sly said, no, man, we can't go on the stage.
Can't keep doing that. Wouldn't be good.
Sorry, Bob.
It wouldn't be good for your career. You know what I mean? You don't do that. War did it in Germany.
Yeah.
Remember that group?
Oh, yeah.
War,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The world is a ghetto and
them
big and them think them hot and them made Bob open run German. Yeah. Big mistake.
Again, I have a question because we're talking about evolution of ska through rocksteady to reggae.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying how in ska, the song had to be limited within a 2.5 minute time frame?
Yeah, in those days, not just ska, but even American song, 2-3 minute song, you couldn't go past three.
I want to know when version came about. Did that come along when people started putting dub versions on the albums, on the B-sides? Did that come with the evolution from ska through rocksteady to reggae once they got to reggae?
In other words,
like the rhythm's getting
when
longer.
When did version come? When did dub
when
too?
The dub?
Dub was always there.
Dub through ska.
Dub was always there, but here's how dub used to be in those days. Only
the producer, the producer who made the song, had his dub. He would make a dub copy of the song, you know, and then he would take it to his favorite DJ when them playing at a dance and test it to the crowd. See if it made the people that move. If it made them move, then them print it.
But that one, a lot of them didn't even have no, it was just blank?
Yeah.
Just blank, you didn't even...
Yeah, some of the, those were like test copies and stuff that you give out to your DJs. But what you actually, the question, the answer, the real answer to your question though, you know, is that the transition really took place between rocksteady and reggae, and that is when there were more DJs playing and promoters found out it was profitable to have even the version of the song and that them could sell to the DJs before anybody else.
I got a question. Is it cheaper? Because I used to this would come to me. Like, I would look at certain artists, and I say, man, they got two vocal sides, two different vocal sides. And then other artists, it would just be the vocal and the version. And it seemed like more money would go into a two side that hit than one side that's a vocal side and a version side.
Yeah, it's a financial gain.
Yeah.
It's also a financial gain.
Yeah.
You know, I make one song, I sing it. The same rhythm is what I used to sing it on. I can print it again without the voice, change up the rhythm. Didn't pay nobody else to come do that, you know.
Yeah.
But I can give you 100 version.
Yeah. So it's the producer that got enough money to put a two-sided song out.
Yeah.
And the artist, you know, they bank on the artist that's here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And DJs, more DJs were coming up, so DJs needed tracks without voice to sing over.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that part of it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. I think it's still growing because it still needs tracks.
Still, doing it. And in Jamaica, vinyl is still big business.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh,
they didn't stop doing that.
Nah, not everybody. You know, CD qualities are nice, but the CD is so clean that it sometimes take away the spirit of the song. Because it's too clean, it's just too synthetic.
It's too computer.
Yeah, you know.
When
you put that together with musicians not playing them instrument anymore, but having a computer play it for them, I mean...
Now that's one of the biggest problems that I find, and I hear what some people are saying when they go to Jamaica now. They don't want to even go to the studio because they don't know how to do a real drum, a real instrument. They're so used to now computer stuff that it's very hard to find a studio that the engineer even know what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
So like, it's like Ansel said with Meditations, the latest album, and he did a lot of this stuff. Philip Smart did it out in Long Island, man.
Oh, yeah.
He said he wasted his time in Jamaica.
Oh, yeah. Them don't know how to play no more, man. There's not many musicians being created anymore. Kids are not playing them. Them play it, them making the thing. Do it for them.
Because it's harder work. It's more time that you gotta put into doing that. Drumming, man.
Well, think about this. If I can go, the way them see it is, we're talking about these kids that, you know, and this is not a down to the kids, because the kids is not their fault. You have all these equipment. Like you don't really have to work anymore. You really don't have to work anymore, you know. Physically. You can go in the studio and go, you I'm talking to. That's all Bob would have for record. And them just replayed every part that was cut and paste, cut piece, cut piece, cut piece. And Bob would be every time it hit that part, you I'm talking to. And don't sing the song.
Wow.
He says,
that take a lot.
You know, instead of going into the studio and go, bam, boom, bar. You play that one bar.
Put it on a loop.
And just loop it.
Yeah.
I'll see you. $300. See you tomorrow. You got another song, call me.
Oh, man.
You know.
So that really takes away musicians up on that one.
That's right. Real musicians curtain and let them do it themselves. Yeah. You know.
That is one of the ruinations.
And the things that are created are real good stuff, but they're not using them the way they should be used, you know. In other words, I use a lot of computer stuff on my album, you know, my CD there, but it's like I play them. I literally play them. I didn't let them play themselves.
Okay.
I use the sound.
Okay.
I program the drum so it roll and do and make sure it does the right thing. It don't just poof,
yeah.
Straight, you know. And the keyboard stuff, I play them with my finger.
Yeah.
You don't just let it play and you don't just loop it. You play it to the end so it have a little naturality to it. That's how you're supposed to use these things. Remember before, you know, Jimi Hendrix, you know, make them invent the wah-wah and a lot of others. Stevie Wonder made them invent the synthesizer. Remember when they was doing this album and them hook up all this whole room filled with different patch cards.
Yeah.
So Stevie couldn't get the what it's called again, man? Damn, can't remember, but it's a particular song, synthesized song. Wild man, then create a synthesizer right after that. Stevie get the first one. You see? That's not happening anymore because of those things kids don't play anymore. You know? It's all about the loop.
And then the dance hall has changed the music.
Mm-hmm. See, dance, I don't know if dance hall changed it, you know. It's just. Dancehall always been there because you had King Stitch.
Okay.
And
okay.
Them on the dancehall always was there, but it has risen to a level. It has never during the time that it was hot. It usually don't get above singers and players.
Okay.
Singers and players always was there. And when a dancehall come on was nice like you, right?
Yeah.
With a lot of hits.
Yeah.
It was just pretty much equal.
Yeah.
Never passed Bob Marley, never passed the Wailers,
yeah,
or Melodians. The one was just there. Yeah, the singers were there. But it got to the level where people stopped, right? And the artists that started to get out wasn't the singers anymore. You know, it was the quick thing and then the rap take over. So with
that,
rap,
all that
it just fit in with rap, and it's just an era.
With Inner Circle, the days of Jacob Miller with Inner Circle to the days right now where Inner Circle is.
Oh yeah.
It's
totally
changed.
This guy got now singing for Inner Circle, man, it just don't move me. He sounds strictly like, he ain't a singer. Well, he's a singer, but it's the style. It's more dancehall style.
Mm-hmm.
More of a, I would say contemporary. More contemporary. Yeah, but Jacob Miller was an unusual kind of.
Yeah.
He was right there in between.
Yeah, man.
Gave the whole thing. Whole package.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Plus, he had the personality of an entertainer.
Yeah, he did.
Which not many artists got.
Yeah, he had. He definitely had. And he was a young man. I just think 25 years old, man. He was just beginning.
Well, and career had just begun to blossom.
Yep. And boom.
Well, sometimes it is said that sometimes Jah picked the most beautiful flower out of the garden, you know, himself, you know.
So, I like you, man.
Don't have no fear when someone die young, you know. Just the most beautiful flower sometimes leave there, you know. Just like you're walking by a garden, you see it.
Yeah.
You go pick the prettiest one, you're not going to pick the one that's not.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, so it goes sometime, man. It's just life. Oh, yeah.
Well, I can tell you that I can remember seeing... See, that's the thing. Talking to you... If I talked to you and hadn't ever seen Jamala before, it'd be one thing. But... I don't know when is the first time it had to be, well, I know I seen the city of Soya at the Ritz. I'm trying to remember where else. But I never forget the feeling, the vibe that I got with just four. Well, see, that's the same vibe I felt with Click. You know, Clinton only got four in the band.
When you played the John Mahler tape from The Bottom Line, and I heard that, and then you told me only four members,
yeah,
I was blown away that four people could create a sound like that. Four people.
I mean, now you see these bands with all these different musicians, I mean, you know, it's
true,
like...
True musicians. Four.
You know, some of it look like it's a waste sometimes, a guy just stand up there, but you got four people that four can people make the sound and go, make that sound. Man.
Hey.
Blew me away.
Here we go again, the Beatles.
Beatles.
Wheelers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Four people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, that's another phenomena that was different too. Is when I was a youth, the groups didn't have musicians. It was singers. And you had big bands. So I think the Beatles, well, it was the Beatles, I would say, My experience with music is when I would go to the Apollo, yes, I didn't see my favorite artists playing instruments. They were all singers.
Then later on, them take care of themselves.
Nah. Now that you mention him, there's another artist that come to my mind, and we just talked about it the other day, and I don't see where he's at. I mean, I never bought no music. It's Barry White.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he may have, but he...
No, I'm not Barry.
He got a great voice.
We're talking about Barry.
Yeah.
Mess with Barry.
Mess with Barry.
You take your lady to see a Barry show, he better hold on to her. Jerry's got that touch. Jerry's like...
See, I never saw him.
It's like an hypnotic thing. Him and Isaac was into a thing too, because okay, both of them was doing the same. But Barry came with some... He came with the disco thing and the...
See, now what's in the disco?
No, man, Barry hot, man.
All right.
You have to go back and get some Barry, man.
All right.
Take out some Barry, you see, you're right. Nah, man, Barry got you as a man going, sitting there going, right on, brother, right on. We would, in the early days when I was in America, yeah, you know, it's like, you would take your daughter over and you dim the lights. And, you know, first music, so like, Barry, right?
Come on, baby.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, Barry!
Yeah. Can't get enough for your love, babe. Yo, what? Oh, man. Because I'm singing and I'm rapping, you know. It's like, ooh, never hear it. We hear Isaac rap, but Isaac was more like,
I stand accused
of love. It was more like a, okay, sit and chill, this is Isaac. Don't even move a muscle. Then here comes Barry, who said, I just don't know why. Can't get enough of your love, baby. It's like, whoa, can dance to this shit.
Yeah.
Yo,
there must have been some couple
songs. You must have heard.
Yeah. There was some songs that I like. But I just say that he just was, you know what it was? It was the period when I was getting into reggae. So I stopped listening. Everything black American music, I just block out. Blocked everything.
That could do it.
You know, I was on a mission, man. It's like, man, this is stuff I've been listening to all my life. I stopped wanting to hear about. And then when Peter Todd would say, don't flush that, loving the girlfriend, you know, how many bumper clock times you got to hear about loving the girl in the course of it? So this is the stuff I started really thinking about and saying, well, I grew up hearing, love, I love you, baby. I grew up hearing that. I want to hear some substance. I want to hear some.
Yeah, but Peter had a hard time saying, I love you. I hear Peter say a song about this theater, there's something about this. It's a funky thing when sing with a girl.
Oh, you know, Guthrie or something?
I don't remember, but it's a funky thing when sing with a girl, but the girl, I say, I love you, and, you know, some stuff about love, and, you know, the best that come out of Peter's mouth from the song while I'm saying, me too, feel it.
The girl said, the girl said, mash it up. Okay. Me too, Felix.
I'm going to tell you what the problems were.
Some Archibong Kati,
you know. I'm going to tell you what it's called. Same problem with Bob. He had the same problem that Bob had about the woman as their mamas. Mm. Okay. Happiness. That song Bob sang with Happiness. You know that? Okay. Your mother is gone. Send him to Kingston to supposedly to his father. How he gonna look at his mother after that? And he was some lady that he his some auntie or something raising him and Bob running around in the street. That's an angry man. Where's my mother? Where's my mama? I know from my mother dying, being angry at my mother dying, that is more, it's like I had to learn, my mother didn't say, well, son, I'm leaving you, bye. She didn't have no control over that. But you got a mother that's going to put you somewhere, that's going to affect you, man, as an adult. You're going to grow up and say, well, why did my mother, where's the love? Does she really love me? You know, now maybe later on in life they got reconnected, but that early, man. Like you said, the first 7 years, man.
Crucial.
Yeah. And Peter's mother wasn't there.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, so I mean that stuff is gonna affect anybody.
One way or another.
But then they was all mixed up anyway with Bunch. It's like Larry told me, he said, man, them guys, okay, Bob's mother hooked up with Buddy's father. And I said, wait a minute, now, what?
Yeah,
so they all related. They all connected.
No.
What time we got?
1 o'clock.
Damn. That.